Between a Rock and a Hard Place. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Colleen.
And we're gonna tell you about our life in Iraq.
It's gonna be fun.
I hope so.
Kurds and Middle Easterners have a reputation for being hospitable, and it is a well-deserved reputation.
Oh, absolutely. For sure.
I don't think I've ever met more welcoming people, like sincerely eager to have you in their home, in their space.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like in America, Southerners have that reputation of being, like, very hospitable and welcoming.
It doesn't hold a candle
to
the Middle East.
No, not even close.
When people told me that about the South and then I moved here, I was like, I don't understand what people are talking about.
Right, well, because you lived in Kurdistan, where...
Well, and honestly, I also lived in the Northwest, and I feel like people there are just as friendly, with the exception of, like, waving at strangers, which is something that the people in the South do.
Yes. But this is not a podcast about how awesome the South is, because it is awesome.
That's not an awesome feature. It was just awkward.
Awesome. Anyway... One of my first days in country, probably my first day in the country, actually, one of our neighbors came over to say hello to us, which was already kind of weird. And she was like, it's my son's birthday. You should come over because it's his birthday. You should come celebrate with us. And my roommate and I were like, okay, sure. And then didn't go because we thought it was one of those, like, I'm inviting you, but I don't really want you to show up. And she showed up to our house the next day and was like, why didn't you come? Where were you? Are you sick? What's wrong? And we were both kind of like, I don't know how to explain to you that we didn't think you really meant it. And we had to arrange to come over to her house. Like, I think we actually went over there. We were like, give us 20 minutes. We'll be right there. And it was just aggressive hospitality, I think. I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a pushiness to it that doesn't just include the invitation.
Right.
It includes, like, the entire time that you are there, including not letting you leave.
Right. Oh, yeah, it's a fight to be able to leave. It was always, I feel like I don't have this problem in America of being like, well, I gotta go, see ya, and then... People, like, literally grabbing on to me and being like, no,
you
have to stay.
We haven't done this, that, or the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have not eaten dessert.
You
have
not tea.
Drunk enough tea or fed you enough food or it's early. And you're like, it's 10:30.
Right. Which is early for them. Yeah. Again, a different neighbor. We would go over to their house from time to time to visit, you know, is the neighborly thing to do. And anytime we'd be like, we need to go home, like, we have work to do, we have papers to grade. She would always be like, you don't need to grade their papers. They don't care. It's fine. Stay here. Bring your papers, bring your work here and work here. And I was like, we're not gonna get anything done if we come over here. Because your TV is on, like, 85 and it's so loud. But it was also always, like, nice to feel wanted in that way.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's like, I've been having a bad day. I need to feel better about myself. I'll go visit the neighbor.
So maybe we should go back to the beginning of a normal visit.
Sure.
When you first arrive at your neighbor or student's family or friend's family's home, you knock on the door or the gate, someone comes out to greet you, you do handshaking or kissing, cheek, and then you get up to the door, you take off your shoes.
Yep, everybody takes off their shoes. I learned pretty quickly that if you're gonna go visiting, it's better to have shoes that are easy to take on and off.
Slip-ons!
Yeah, that's why this is not... We're not sponsored by Chacos, but that's why I lived in Chacos while I was there, because they're the easiest shoes to get on and off.
At least in the summer.
In the summer, for sure.
Yep.
Some houses that I went to, you would take your shoes off, and they would have slippers there for you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, actual slippers in the winter, or, like, nice kind of like slip-on flip-flop plastic shoes mm-hmm. in the summer, which sometimes was nice, but also sometimes was a little bit like, other people's sweaty feet have been in these. It's kind of gross. And then once you get in the house, depending on like how often you've come to visit, but let's say it's a first-time visit, mm-hmm. they're going to put you in the formal living room.
Yes, the parlor.
With very shiny, sparkly, beautiful, untouched furniture, sometimes with plastic covers on it, that is deeply uncomfortable to sit on.
Yeah, but I mean, it's Western furniture in mm-hmm. that sense that it's up off the floor and there's a coffee table and end tables and, mm-hmm. and you know, lamps and that kind of thing.
Really nice carpets usually mm-hmm. in there. Mm-hmm.
Beautiful carpet.
And it's really, yeah, it's some of the most uncomfortable furniture I've ever sat on in my life. Mm-hmm. But it looks really nice, I guess, and so...
And that's not where they hang out.
Right, right. So it's like, this is an honor. We're going to put you in the fancy room.
The one major bonus of that room is that sometimes that room does not have a television.
Oh, that is true.
So it's quieter.
Yes. Yes, because it is very... considered very polite to turn on the TV for your guests if you have one. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's polite or like a status symbol or just like a habit. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure I ever associated the turning on of the television to my arrival. Usually I feel like the television was always just on. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they would change the channel to MTV or like an American pop or rap music for me.
Right. Something with English.
With English, which is worse.
Right? Sometimes it was really fun to watch the, like, weird Turkish or Arab...
The soap operas.
Soap operas.
Those are so
They're
weird.
They're so entertaining. And it's like, I don't need English. I understand what's going on. Uh-huh. You make it very clear.
Like the Spanish language videos you watch like in Spanish class. Yeah.
Yeah. But in Arabic.
Or Turkish.
So a lot of times I would ask, like, no, turn it back. And I would always say, like, I'm trying to learn. Help me learn Kurdish. I never was. I was just more entertained by the... overacting.
And preferred not being able to understand the swear words.
100%. 100%.
But they also seem to appreciate that as well, I feel like. If you could communicate that.
Yes. You are always immediately given some kind of food or
and
snack.
And water. Or orange soda.
Orange soda. Yeah. Sometimes you get the option. Do mm-hmm. you want water or orange soda? Sometimes it's just like, here's both.
Sometimes juice. Yeah. Orange flavored juice.
I feel like I got that less often.
I had one lady, one of my neighbors actually, I spoke with and got to know pretty well, and she, somewhere along the way, had heard that Americans really like orange soda. And so she used to always bring me orange soda, and then after we got to know each other better and like we had a conversation about it, she was like, I just thought, I was told that Americans really love orange soda. And I was like, no, really, for the most part, American kids drink orange soda. I liked it when I was a kid. Most grown-ups don't really drink orange soda.
Right.
And she was like, oh. And it was just like, this is just what I've always known. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how that, because obviously we lived in very different regions and it was consistent across both of those regions. Mm-hmm. And I'm really curious how that got started.
How that rumor got started. I will say I prefer orange soda in Kurdistan to any orange soda I've had in the U.S. And I'm not sure if that's like, I have warm feelings associated with like orange soda equals hospitality.
Right.
Or if it's just better in some way.
I'm trying to think. I don't think I've actually drunk any orange soda since living in Kurdistan.
Somebody had some at their house and I tried some and I was like, this is not good.
Oh.
But yeah, it's weird that way.
Now, if you manage to show up at a mealtime or are invited for a meal, or maybe it's not mealtime, but they happen to be cooking, so they're going to give you a meal regardless.
Right.
Doesn't matter what time of day it is. There aren't the standards for when meals are exactly the same way in the U.S. where you like roughly know this is always mm-hmm. dinner time.
Yeah, we made the mistake of being like, if we show up at like 3 or 4, it's not meal time for them. 3 or 4 is like siesta time, though. And so, at least in Erbil, it was like, we're all taking naps. We learned pretty quickly that's a bad time to show up.
Yeah. Because I feel like for most of the families I knew in Suli, 3 or 4 was mealtime. Because that was when everyone got home from school.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I guess that's true.
Everyone ate then, and then also again at like 9 o'clock at night.
Maybe I just had like older neighbors would take naps at that time.
Yeah, I don't know. If you go for a meal, then it's a much bigger production depending on the family that you're visiting. And again, some of the formality of that, you could also be taken to a formal dining room.
Right.
With like a table and chairs, usually plastic, not always. I think I knew one family with wooden table and chairs. Mm-hmm. And then be served the meal there at the table. But much more commonly, I feel like, was the more family-style meal in the other room.
Right.
The
like, actual living room?
Yeah, the room that is lived in.
Yeah. And that room has dosheks, which are just, like, really thin foam mattresses that are covered in fabric on the floor. Uh-huh. And everybody just sits on the floor and like they put
pillows, almost.
Yeah, but big, like they're long.
Like mattress-sized pillows.
Right. And they put like plastic picnic tables over, or tablecloths over the carpet. Carpet. And then they put all the food on that, and someone sits near the middle and serves food onto plates, and they get passed to you.
The goal for all of those dishes and plates is that there need to be a lot of plates, and they need to be overflowingly full.
Yes.
Each one has to be, like, packed to its fullest amount.
Mm-hmm.
And so it makes it very difficult to serve, especially, like, the giant pile of rice.
Yep.
And you're, like, trying to scoop without, like, knocking the whole pile off onto the tablecloth.
Mm-hmm. Which inevitably happens.
Which happens, no matter who's serving it. So there are dozens and dozens of tiny little dishes and bigger ones, and everything is just heaping with whatever it is they're serving you that day.
And you are expected to eat as much as you can possibly pack in?
More than you can possibly pack in.
True. And they will keep refilling your plate. And, like, if you slow down, they'll be like, what? Don't you like it? Isn't it good? Like,
why aren't you eating?
Eat, boho. And there's just a lot of peer pressure to eat as much, like,
eat more.
Until you feel like you're gonna die.
The one way that I felt like I could kind of tell people I was done and wasn't going to eat more, it only worked sometimes, was to tell people I was on a diet.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was something that is, like, understood there. In my head, I was on a diet of, I would like to not eat until I explode.
Right. Yeah. I got super dramatic about it and be like, oh, I'm so full. Like, oh, I'm going to die if you feed me anymore. And, like, I feel like if I could make them laugh or be like, okay. Like,
yeah.
I feel like that's cultural too. Like, you have to be like heavily insistent that, like, I do not want any more.
Like, I loved it. I have eaten so much because I loved it so much that I can't fit any more in. And yeah, but you definitely have to, whatever your path is, you have to, like, really emphasize it.
Yep. Or be like, where am I going to put it? In my pockets? Like, I pulled that one on somebody once. Like, here, give it to me. I'll shove it in my pocket. Is this what you want? So yes, humor sometimes works too.
Hey there. While you're here, obviously, learning about Iraq, you should head over to our website, servantgroup.org, to learn a little bit more. We definitely recommend the blog post, Iraq is Dangerous, Go Anyway. It could, you know, lead you to move halfway around the world.
But that meal is also not the end of the visit by any means.
No, you can't just eat and run.
Well, and a meal is not complete unless you have tea. A meal without tea is not a meal. It's a snack.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, sometimes it's still a snack.
You also have to include bread. bread also is required for a meal.
Mm-hmm. Which is weird because, like, pizza is not considered a meal, but it's
pizza's
bread.
Pizza's not bread.
But it is, but it's not.
It's not naan.
I guess that's true. And so tea is a really big deal. Mm-hmm. There's tea everywhere all the time. It's like a digestive, like, element to a meal.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, you have eaten. Now you must have tea so you can digest well.
So they'll clean up all of the plates and dishes and everything and, like, wipe down the tablecloth and fold it up as they go and then bring out the tea. And usually, like, the oldest woman will sit there and, like, the younger women will bring her all the tea things.
Mm-hmm.
And she is given both a pot of, like, super, super strong tea and a pot of boiling hot water. And she'll sit there and she'll pour hot water, the boiling water, over all the teacups. Like, it's, like, sterilize everything.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, sticks her hand in a little bite. Like, I don't know how their hands survive all this boiling water.
They're used to it.
And then hot water and tea go in the glass. Tea and then the hot water until it's the right color.
Right.
And lots of sugar.
Yeah. And I saw a couple people who had sugar cubes, but for the most part, it was loose sugar.
I feel like the sugar cubes are more common in the bazaar and places like that. But, like, sometimes the older men, and maybe it's something that older people have done, you know, do, but they'll, like, dip their sugar cube into the tea in the little saucer and then suck the tea out of the sugar cube and continue to do it that way.
Yeah, I think I was also told that some people have sugar cubes and hold them between their teeth and drink the tea so it, like, goes through the sugar cube.
Through the sugar cube?
Right. But they didn't really, like, put them in the tea and mix them around.
No, if you were going to put your sugar in the tea, they used regular granulated sugar.
And the tea is served in these little glasses.
Uh-huh. Called piala in my area.
Istakhan, I think, is what they call them in Dahuk.
Okay, I think that's the
Turkish. And so they're like tiny little glass vases. There's no handle.
People call them tulip glasses.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. And they're served on a little glass saucer.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes ceramic, but usually glass.
And you can't, like, grab them because it's got boiling hot tea in it.
And they fill it all the way to all the edge. The way. Like, with the water tension kind of holding a bubble of tea over the edge of the surface.
Uh-huh.
Like, they know exactly how much to pour in there.
It's almost dangerous. So there are a couple strategies for tea drinking. Some people pick it up by the dish and, like, will lift it up and sip out of it. That always seemed very precarious to me.
It's a little sensitive.
I think that might, like, be very kind of the old school way and also, like, highly skilled tea drinkers.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely did that.
Yeah. Some people take their tea, their very full teacups, and tip them into the saucers, like, a little bit.
You have to touch them first, though.
Yeah, but just, like, enough to get it to splash over. And so then they can pick them up by, like, you pick it up by, like, the top rim of it.
Right.
With, like, two fingers so that the least surface area possible is touching the boiling hot glass.
Mm-hmm. And if you've spilled a little bit out, like, that top edge will cool off a little bit because it's no longer touching.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you can drink the tea.
Right. And I always feel like people slurped it, like, that thing. again, because it was really hot, and because I was always afraid I was going to spill it and, like, burn, like, all my face off.
Yeah, I feel like I got pretty used to just picking it up by the edges and sipping it and, like, just maybe losing all feeling in those two fingers and just dealing with the pain.
Mm-hmm.
I know some people talked about people pouring it into the saucer to then drink it. I don't think anyone I ever met did that.
I feel like that's an Arab thing.
Okay.
And I feel like Kurds would make fun of you if you did it. Like, it's not very refined, maybe, by their standards.
I don't know.
You can almost never get tea without some kind of sugar in it. I learned really quickly that, like, in order to control the amount of sugar you're actually drinking, you stir it limited amounts.
Or not at all.
Or not at all.
That was kind of my method. Don't stir. Because you also, in this cup, like, all of the sugars at the bottom, sometimes it's like half an inch to an inch deep of sugar at the bottom. And you're served with this really short, usually gold color, sometimes silver, spoon that's just for tea. And, like, the little tinkling sounds, like, as everybody stirs, are, like, supposedly really happy. And
yeah. It's, like, very musical.
There's all sorts of, like, weird superstitions about, like, if you get two spoons in your tea by accident, like, that's the number of spouses you'll have, or how sweet your tea is. Like, if a girl likes a guy, she'll make his tea extra sweet when she visits, or when he visits her family, or... Like, all sorts of things like that.
I only ever heard that Kurds stir the tea one way and Arabs stir the tea the opposite direction. Really? I don't know if that's true or not. I just thought it was funny. Mm-hmm. And that, like, really expert tea drinkers can, like, swirl their spoon without any tinkling of the glass. So that's how you can tell, like, how good someone is at tea.
Yeah, it's not just a drink.
Right.
Like... it's a cultural practice and an art form.
Mm-hmm. I don't like tea, so for a really long time, I struggled with that. Because it's like, if you say, oh, I don't really care for tea, people are like, why?
What's wrong with you? There is something wrong with you if you don't like tea.
And so I learned the only kind of tea that I like is really, really hot, really, really sweet Kurdish tea served to me in a little glass. Like, because, again, because I associated it with that hospitality and that, like, community feeling of here we all are sipping our tea. I do like it, and it is about the only kind of tea I like. They don't put milk or anything in it. It's just, it's like black tea with cardamom in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love tea with cardamom in it now. Like, it's not a way I ever drank tea in the U.S.
Right.
Now I do. I buy it from the Kurdish markets with cardamom in it.
And sometimes, because I didn't think that I liked tea initially, I would get offered coffee, and that was a mistake.
Yeah, there are really only two ways you get coffee.
Tea drinking cultures are not the places to ask for coffee.
Yeah. You either get Turkish coffee, which is, like, strong and, like, half ground.
Gritty. It's very gritty.
And for them... I've had some Turkish coffee that was good, just never in a Kurdish.
It also has home. That cardamom kind of flavor to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or you get like Nescafe, like the 3-in-1 packet, or even just a black, I don't know.
Black instant coffee.
Instant coffee.
Which they want to be the same color as tea sometimes, and so they'll make it very, very weak. Again, I learned to like the 3-in-1, which is coffee, non-dairy creamer, and sugar all in one little, like, packet.
I never did.
I had actually an American friend that quite liked it, and so I associated it.
Some.
Associate it with her, and so I enjoy it because of the memories. But it's not something I would ever buy in the U.S. So yeah, tea is the way to go, for sure.
Oh yeah, it's so good.
And when you drink tea, like if you're just going to someone's house to visit, you will also get served tea and water. And usually some form of little snacks, like little kalecha cookies, which are like date and walnut filled. It's almost like a pie pastry.
Right.
In different shapes. They also have...
a little bowl of nuts and seeds.
Mm-hmm. Pumpkin seeds and pistachios and cashews all kind of mixed together. Sunflower seeds. Sometimes they'll just give you, like, sunflower seeds in the shell still.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to be able to, like, crunch off the shell and eat the seed inside and spit the shell out. I never ate those because I was like, I don't know how to do this. I'm going to end up with, like, shell all down in front of me. And I am not skilled in this.
It takes some practice.
Because you can't spit the shell out, like, into a bowl. You have to, like, kind of spit it in your hand?
You don't actually put the whole shell in your mouth.
Okay, see? What do I know?
You just have to crack it on the edges, and then it will split open in half, And you can dump the little inside into your mouth and hold onto the shell, which is not spitty. Spitty.
Apparently, I always did it wrong, which is why I just stopped doing it. You also will almost always get fruit.
Mm-hmm.
And someone told me before I went to Kurdistan that when the fruit comes out, it's a signal that it's time for you to go home. I asked, once I, like, got to know Kurdish people fairly well, like, so is this a real thing? The, like, you brought out fruit, you want me to leave? And consistently, all of them were like, no. We would never do anything to, like, signal to people that it's time for them to get out of the house. Like, that is unfathomable to them to be, like, signaling that people should leave.
Yeah. I think the way that it does work is that often you cannot leave until the fruit has been served.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to intimate and say, and usually you, like, plan this, like, an hour before you absolutely really need to go, and you start saying, well, it looks like it's about time for me to go. I need to go now. And then they'll be like, no, 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 no. Wait, wait, we haven't had fruit yet. And so then they'll, like, go get the fruit and bring the fruit out, and then you need to sit there and chat while everybody slowly and meanderingly eats a piece of fruit, mm-hmm. or two, which, after you've had all this food, is just...
It's like death.
It's so much food. You're like, now you have given me an entire apple. But in some ways, though, that was one of my favorite parts. Once I got to it and took the apple and, like, learned to, like, cut it up in fun ways. Because you also get a little knife and a little plate. And so you can either peel your orange, like, or cut your apple fancy. I used to cut it with, like, weird little zigzags and make it so that you could see a star in the middle. Because
mm-hmm.
you got to eat it slowly because you can't fit anything in you at that point.
Yep. Yeah, I was never quite sure what to do with bananas. I felt like those were a weird fruit. I think most of the ways I saw other people eat them was they would cut them in half.
Uh-huh.
And peel them and, like, cut slices off and eat the slices.
Yeah.
Which just felt weird to me, like, too much work. But I guess if you're trying to, like, drag out the time or, like, make space in your tummy for more, that makes sense.
Makes sense to eat it slowly.
Yeah. Yeah, fruit was always awkward to me. I don't know why. Probably because I was always frustrated by the tiny knives.
The tiny dull knives.
Yeah. But then saying goodbye is its own special production of, you have to, like, stand up and start walking towards the door, mm-hmm. or you can't ever get out of there.
Right.
If you keep saying, oh, I have to go, and you don't actually, like, begin to leave, they won't let you go.
They're never going to be like, well, thanks for coming. It was great to have you here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, no. They're never going to end the conversation. They're never going to give you the, it's time for it to be done.
Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, you just kind of have to make it happen. Because the conversation will follow you as you leave all to put on your shoes.
Through the shoes and out the door, all the way to the gate,
mm-hmm.
which...
But before you can do that, you have to say goodbye to everyone who's there.
Oh, absolutely. So even people who've, like, wandered off to other rooms, like, they have to go get them and bring them out so that you can say goodbye to them. And
shake hands, kiss, kiss. All the 20 minutes of, like, have a wonderful day. I hope your family is well. We're so glad you came. God be with you. God go with you.
Mm-hmm.
May God be with you. God be with you.
Mm-hmm. And you. And you.
And you. And
But I will say, that whole process of, like, following people, like, all the way out the door,
mm-hmm.
I didn't realize how used to that I had become and how weird that is in America.
Right.
Until I moved back here.
Right.
And how, like, I follow people out onto our front yard,
mm-hmm.
and they're all like, do you need something else from me? And I'm like, no, I'm just saying goodbye.
Yeah.
Or, like, leaving somebody's house and having them just shut the door behind mm-hmm. you. It feels so abrupt.
Right.
It's a little so strange. Like, now I'm on my own.
Yep.
You didn't walk me to the street.
Mm-hmm.
Wave at me as the car went away.
Yep. Oh, when we would visit our neighbor lady would walk us back to our gate
mm-hmm.
and be like, okay, thanks. I gotta close the door and, like, push you out, too. Like, this visit didn't also come to my house now.
I love that, though.
It is. It's wonderful. Like, again, it makes it feel like it's really, you really want me to be around. It's not inconveniencing you in any way.
Never feel like you're being kicked out of a space or, like, mm-hmm. you're unwanted. Like, you know that if something were going on and you needed to, like, stay all night there, you could.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, there are more than one family was like, oh, it's too late for you to go home now. Like, you should just stay. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I can't.
Right.
Like, please stay the night. Yeah. I'm like, if I stay the night, I know we are going to stay up all night talking. Yeah. And you will not let me leave in the morning.
And for me, if I was at somebody's house late, like if I was visiting a student or something and ended up being at their house really late, I didn't ever have a car. Mm. And so it was not okay for me to take a taxi that late by mm-hmm. myself. And so they would always rouse out like an older brother or, you know, the older uncle and be like, we will take you home.
Yeah.
And like the student would come with me so that I'm not like alone in this car with this strange man that I don't know.
Right.
But it was never, like, they always want to make sure that you get home safely. Mm-hmm. I don't think I ever got offered to, like, stay the night at someone's house. But I almost always got offered a ride home, even if they had to, like, call up. A lot of times it was, like, the security guy. They would call him up and be like, take her home. It's fine.
Yeah.
And even then, they would walk me to my gate and make sure that I got in my gate and got in my house and, like,
yeah.
the whole thing. Yeah, so if you ever get the chance to hang out with a Middle Eastern family, a Kurdish family, they invite you over for dinner or to visit, know that it's probably going to take several hours. They are not going to want you to leave, but also that it will probably be some of the most wonderful hospitality you've ever experienced. Yeah. Go hungry, for sure.
Yeah. I feel like I have the same kind of experiences here in the U.S. with all of my Middle Eastern friends that I visit here, mm-hmm. whether they're Kurdish or Arab or Somali or yeah. really from any of the countries that, you know, we have English students in. Like, the hospitality they offer is extraordinary.
Yeah, it's an important value in their culture. And one of the things that I think we've both tried to bring into our own home here in the U.S. is, you know, we don't want to make people feel like they're not welcome.
Mm-hmm.
Something I think Americans in general lose out on to some extent.
Yeah, and I think even our pattern in the U.S. tends to be, let's go meet somewhere for coffee,
mm-hmm.
not why don't you come to my home.
Right.
And so I actually often people won't take me up on it, but almost always, if I'm going to have a meeting with someone, I will give the option of, I can meet you at a coffee shop that I know of, a couple of, you know, different places, or if you'd like, come to my house.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes people will take me up on it, and people will remark, I'm like, wow, like, you didn't know me, and
right.
you invited me to your house, and I'm like, yeah. Of course.
Yeah, you're always welcome. Speaking of which, we gotta go get our house clean because we're having a bunch of Kurdish women over.
Yeah, cleaning is also important, and that's something I think we'll address in the future episodes.
Yes, there are many, many levels to that. Holy moly. And we gotta meet them all. Oh, cheek pinching. We didn't talk about that. You will get your cheeks pinched when you go to visit people. I've had my collarbone pinched. I mean,
that must be a Dahuki thing.
Oh, gosh.
I never got pinched. Babies got pinched.
Pinched.
I never got pinched.
Maybe I just have really chubby cheeks.
Oh, no. Adorable, pinchable cheeks.
Maybe.
We'd love to hear from you. You can find us at Servant Group International on Facebook or Instagram, and you should check out our blog and complete transcripts over at servantgroup.org.
And it's really helpful for us if you share our podcast or leave a review on whatever platform you listen to this podcast on. It helps us know that people are listening, and you can let us know what you want to hear next.
Thanks for listening.
What's wrong with you?